You're listening to KBOO Portland.
Cynthia McKinney, and you're listening to Hard Knock Radio.
I'm Arianna Huffington, and when I'm in the Bay, I keep it locked to Hard Knock Radio.
This is Henry Belafonte on Hard Knock Radio.
This is Dennis Kucinich here on Hard Knock Radio.
This is Ron Delms on Hard Knock Radio.
What's up?
Thank you for Hard Knock Radio, hanging out with you this afternoon. As May 1st comes closer and closer, there's been a lot of talk about having a general strike. And many people are saying now more than ever, this is important to at least try to execute, because we're now seeing clear-cut evidence of economic disparities in the middle of this pandemic, in this shelter-in crisis. Joining us on the line from Jackson, Mississippi, is Colleen Cuno, and up there in upstate New York, with the one and only Rosa Clemente. Both of these folks are no strangers to our airwaves. They're freedom fighters, on the ground, activists, organizers, and people who have their finger on the pulse. So let's kick off this conversation. And I guess I'll start off with you, Rosa, just as a check-in. How are things up in where you're at, in New York City, in particular, the epicenter? But we're now starting to see bodies pile up all over the country around this pandemic.
In Albany are state workers, so if they weren't essential, they have been home. For me, I keep telling people this, my husband Justice is a custodian, and he works at the SUNY Albany campus, which is the main university system in the state, and he has a mask and he has gloves, and they're doing what they have to do to social distance at their job. But what they're doing on a lot of the campuses here is they're putting in drive-through testing. And I started a petition around that, because I believe that if you're good enough to take out the garbage and clean up the people's mess, that you as a worker on a campus that is having drive-through testing, that they should have been the first ones to be tested, whether they have symptoms or not. Mm-hmm. It's for me, I'm fighting for that little bit, and I feel so helpless, to be quite honest, because there's really nothing I could do with that. It didn't matter how many people signed the petition. Ultimately, it was up to the president of the university and Governor Cuomo. You know, as for downstate in New York City, I mean, it's horrific. And I have a friend that's right on the front lines. He's a chief of a ER, pediatric ER, actually, and he's the one that intubates people all the time. And he's at a very good hospital, Jacoby Hospital in the Bronx. David, you grew up in the Bronx, but all of us who grew up in the Bronx, and for people who don't know, Jacoby Hospital was the hospital you would go to, because it is an excellent hospital. And people should check out the 60 Minutes interview yesterday they did with the nurse at Jacoby Hospital. And my friend who is, you know, a doctor there is saying what they're going to begin, and they're beginning to run out of now, is that you need medicine to intubate people. So it's not just about putting the plastic tube down your throat. You have to have medicine before that and medicine after, and you have to be consistently checked, and the pain has to be managed. And he said they're running out of all of that. As well, they're running out of morphine so that they can manage some of the pain that elderly people are going through. So concretely, those are the two things that I can speak to about what's happening in upstate New York and a little about what's happening in New York City.
Before I bring in Kali, one thing I want to see if you can alert our listeners, especially those around the country, they're looking at Andrew Cuomo, Governor Cuomo, who is showing up on TV every day, as much as the president. And many people are saying, hey, that guy, he seems like he's in control. He seems to know a lot. He seems like a good guy. Let's draft him and try to get him to run for president or be considered vice president or anything. You're right there in the Capitol, and you are very familiar with Governor Cuomo. What's the deal with him? Is this somebody that you should be putting money on, or what?
Well, no, I'm not putting my money on no white men anymore, period. Like, that day was definitely over earlier today with the Biden endorsement the Bernie endorsement for Biden. I mean, and people who know my politics know by now, I don't ever depend particularly on white men to be out here saving us. But look, the thing with Cuomo is, compared to Trump, anybody would look much better. Let's just put that out there first, right? Second, these governors are doing exactly what they were elected to do. And I feel that because people have seen, particularly the federal government, in such a mess and in shambles and the destruction that they're putting out and not caring about us, period, or no care from the federal government at all, that of course Cuomo looks incredible in, you know, but that's what governors are supposed to do. Like, for me, you don't get extra rewards because you do what your job or what the people elected you to do. So when I see the press conferences every day, first, I live a mile away, and people need to know there are no journalists of color that have been at those press conferences. And some of us have tried to get passes to cover these press conferences, and we've been denied. So first, there's no journalists of color, and we know how important journalists of color are, because they're going to raise a lot of issues that these white journalists aren't even thinking of. And second of all, Cuomo has cut Medicaid for the last 8 years. And in this new budget, he just cut Medicaid again. So their reason, especially in upstate New York, all the way to the Canadian border, that there are not a lot of hospitals and ICU is because of his policies of cutting Medicaid for the entire time that he's been the governor. He also has cut education, right? He has cut programs that are literally feed the people, teach the people type of programs. And lastly, he has done not one move, not let one person out of an incarcerated state, whether it's juvenile facilities, state facilities, or state prisons or jails. Okay, there are governors in the South that are releasing more people who are incarcerated than this governor has. And he did get asked the question the other day. There's an outbreak at Rikers Jail, which is a huge jail in the in Queens, New York. There are outbreaks in state prisons like Sing Sing, where my brother-in-law, my husband's brother, is there right now, and three people have already died in Sing Sing. And now we can see that people are getting phones up in there and videotaping and sending the people messages. His response to the question was, you can social distance in prison. In fact, this might even be safer for them than it is for them to be out. That was his answer on Thursday, 2 days before he was praying to Jesus and the resurrection. So I have no love for him, and I am completely scared to even know how many people are dying, how many juveniles have the virus and are not being taken care of, how many people, like my brother-in-law, might just end up dying and then their bodies just be picked up and put wherever, you know? So I would caution people that at this point, governors like him are doing what they're supposed to do. That's what they were elected to do. But at this point, we need to be all about how we're going to help each other, because he and his other cohort governors, Connecticut, New Jersey, and Massachusetts, and Rhode Island, they're already making plans, because they also want to, quote, open up these states because of what's happening economically.
Wow. You know, I'm glad you said what you said. And hopefully people take that to heart about not being impressed with somebody doing the job that they were elected to do. I think, again, we're looking at incompetence, and we're looking at deliberate neglect in terms of this president. And so anybody who just walks up and does something minimal is seen as a hero. It's kind of like people patting you on the back and going, hey, you're taking your kids to school. Well, they're my kids. I think I should take them to school, you know. But if you are stereotyping or not used to seeing that, then somebody who does the ordinary is seen as extraordinary. And again, these are what these governors are supposed to do. So thank you for that reminder. Kali, you were down in Mississippi. And last time we talked to you, a few things were going on in Mississippi. Mississippi was experiencing a rash of inmates that were dying in that state. It was getting ready to go national, and then we had this pandemic. So I can only imagine what is going on down there now. What's the state of affairs in Mississippi, which was also a state for a while that resisted even doing social distancing and even taking this pandemic seriously?
Well, I mean, the governor changes tune a little bit. You know, once the Republicans start to fold on the you know, stay in place orders. First it was Florida, then Mississippi followed suit, you know, real quickly. But best believe that they are back at it, trying to plan out when to open up the state. And it looks like Mississippi might be one of the leads in taking that, saying that people can just practice social distancing basically at work, and trying to work with Trump's commission that he just set up to figure out when to open up the country. Texas sounded like, as of yesterday, you know, it was a Sunday, their governor was kind of considering taking the lead and opening some things back up. And then I think he wisely said that he's going to hold on for another month. But here, all the indications as of today is that Tate Reeves, who's the newly appointed governor, he just came in basically in January, that he's trying to roll with Trump's agenda. And mind you, so your audience know, you know, when he gave his inauguration speech, it was kind of ironic because he said that he was going to govern the state of Mississippi like Trump governs the country. And we always been joking with folks when Trump got elected that you all have been now subject to how Mississippi gets governed. So, you know, how that turn of the phrase turns back around. But you can see the confusion here playing out. You know, the last week, things were pretty much dead. Probably the most it's been dead since this kind of kicked off. And there was some consistent messaging coming from various government agencies on the state level saying stay at home, stay in place, only do, you know, things that are absolutely essential. But just today had to make a quick run, you know, to the post office, and it looks like business is normal downtown. Mm. You know, just from the conversations that were had over the weekend and the stuff that was put out, we know that there was a couple of different church services that were had with no social distancing was practices for Easter celebrations here. That haven't gotten as much fanfare as some of the things I've seen. I think was in Texas, where they deemed churches to be essential. And I think there was also some in Florida, and I think Tennessee, where there were some major congregations, you know, that were held yesterday, putting a lot of elderly folks, you know, of all races in danger. So you got strategic, well-planned confusion here. Why I'm saying that, not being hyperbole, because who this is really being affected and taken out by, you know, this virus, Black, Latino, you know, indigenous folks, they really don't care about the calculated risk and death of those who are dying. They figure now, and you can hear the conversation, you can hear all the baiting, like, well, you know, the scientists lied by saying that it was going to be 200,000 people. You know, this is what Fox News is saying now. And you see the pressure that's being put on, Fauci's, you know, by Trump, him tweeting him down and shouting him down. So you can see the setup saying, well, you know, 100,000 people dying, that's not that bad. We can tolerate that. That's acceptable. Let's just get back to work. And those who are going to die, they're going to die. Now, you know, we got to really be mindful that the vast majority of the folks that are now deemed essential are folks who they wouldn't give $15 an hour to. folks who they wouldn't let unionize in many cases, who don't have any health care, and they're overwhelmingly black and brown. I don't care, off damn near in almost any state that you're going to find, that's who it is. And then you got to look at, I'm going to broaden it out, Dave, you got to look at, you know, people talking about on some of these mainstream capitalist news channels about the flatlining. I was right before this listening to CNN. They're talking about, oh, there's some good news. How you going to report that there's good news when 4 out of 5 major meat processing plants had to finally come out and disclose that they got hundreds of workers who have been impacted? They haven't been telling folks. Like the largest, the pork factory, I think is in South Dakota. I think there was like 3,000 people who worked at the slaughterhouse. Hmm. And they had to admit on Friday that over 250 of them had COVID-19. And they had kept the lines working and then were forced basically to shut them down from some worker agitation and them just recognizing that they can't sanitize you know, the food supply. And that's happening. A lot of major companies were doing that all week. So this is kicking into a second gear all over, despite all the rosary rhetoric about, you know, the flat line. And the only reasonable voice I heard in the mainstream media was, I forget one of the doctors' name, not that consequential, you know, y'all see them on TV all the damn time, but was one of them who just said, look, I'm not for opening anything until we can have universal testing in this country. Because given how it's spreading in the prisons, given how it's spread amongst, you know, supply chain workers, given how it's spread amongst essential workers, and given how it's spreading amongst the homeless, you know, which, you know, one of the major stories came in on that was right in your backyard in San Francisco over the past week. Given how that's rolling out, we know this thing is going to continue because we don't have the adequate testing, nor do we have a system that really gives any regard for certain populations and communities anyway. So it's not like this thing is going to disappear at the end of the month or next month. This is going to be with us. And we're going to have to fight with these forces to save our lives. I mean, that's really what it's coming down to.
If you're just tuning in, you just heard the voice of Kali Ankuno out of Operation Jackson, Cooperation Jackson down in Jackson, Mississippi. You also heard the voice of Rosa Clemente up in Albany, New York. I want to complicate this a little, and this will jump into this whole conversation about general strike. Earlier this morning, I did an interview that will probably air tomorrow that's talking about the road closures, 74 miles worth of road closures here in Oakland. And this was news, and people were like, okay, why'd they close the roads? And it's like they closed all these streets so people can exercise. But these streets are in the middle of Deep East Oakland, and I talked to people in Deep East Oakland who are like, we didn't even know our streets were going to be closed. And they tried to say, and plus people have backyards in those places and they don't need to go out in the middle of the street. And nobody asked them, you know, to close the streets. But I bring this up because this announcement dovetailed with a conversation with folks in L.A., including Malina Abdullah, who heads up Black Lives Matter L.A., who was talking about they're now starting to question people when they're going into other neighborhoods. Like, why are you in this neighborhood? In fact, right now, even up here, if you go to Half Moon Bay, there's a sign that says, if you don't live here, turn around, you know, basically. And so I'm wondering if we're starting to see the setting up of who can move, who can't move, who has the virus, who has the chromosome or whatever it is to fight the virus. And these will be people that are given immunity passes. They're talking about giving immunity passes out in downtown LA, in LA. And so I'm wondering, as we're looking at the closing of plants and people who have been contaminated and the desire to open up the economy, that they will say, well, Dave, you have the chromosome that fought off the virus, you can work. Kali, you don't have the chromosome, you can't work. And not only can't you work, we now are going to restrict your movements around a particular city so you can't go into this neighborhood or that. It just seems, you know, that those things are being put into place as we have this desire to open up the economy. And you're asking, how are we going to be sure to be safe? We're going to be safe because if Dave doesn't have an immunity card, he can't be out of his house. So let's talk a little bit about these things, because what once seemed far-fetched seems very real and actually very practical, depending on how you frame it. So I'll start off with you, Rosa, and then we'll jump into Kali and let's talk about General Strike.
Can I
go ahead?
Go ahead, Kyle.
Something just real quick.
Yeah.
Number one, I don't think that's far-fetched. And let me say why. This has been normal for folks without papers forever. This is the norm. This already exists.
For undocumented folks.
System.
Yeah.
Yeah. This already exists. And we've tolerated it. You know, folks have accepted it, act like it didn't exist and don't know it. There's other ways in which this plays out already in Black communities. You know, look at some of the stories about brothers and sisters being followed in Walmart for wearing masks. You know, so this, let's not act like the normal was something rosy and, you know, all pristine and safe and sound for folks before. It wasn't. And what all this is doing is just highlighting how brutal, how racist, how sexist the system already was and is. And it's just opening up in certain cases more opportunities to extend that from disposable, the original kind of disposable communities, to spread that out, right? And broaden out who can be restricted, who can be targeted more. And it gives them more opportunity to experiment on all of us. Mm. So like, look, then I'm gonna shut up and let Rosa go. The three of us right now are engaging by using this technology, by using Zoom to do a level of work. We are providing detailed knowledge and information on how to reorganize labor once this crisis is over.
Definitely.
People really need to wrestle with that. Because what capital, what the big corporations are figuring out is how to wrestle out and extract, you know, work and labor and profits from us while keeping us, you know, in place, which means for many places that I don't actually have to have the infrastructure to have an office for you to come into. We could all work like Uber drivers now. We could all work like Lyft drivers now. And you just become some independent contractor working for, in essence, a tech company, putting in a labor, not, you know, on like an hourly thing, but you have to produce strictly upon how many sales or whatever the situation is. So they're going to use this situation in profound ways to reorganize society, and it's not going to be to our benefit unless we fight back in a major way. I'm going to end right there.
Wow. And, you know, Rosa, were you going to jump in or to any of this?
Yeah, I mean, what I would say about that, too, is what's also happening. Well, first, we've seen this happen globally. Like China, of course, is a complete security state. I mean, if you have a high fever, they can detect that while you're just walking out your house. And they can send you tickets, you know, through the mail. We're seeing drones being used to tell people, you know, you have to stand 6 feet away. We didn't see them a lot being used up until this weekend here in the United States. And in certain countries in Africa, they're like disinfecting people, just like disinfecting streets, and they don't care who's around. But I forget what country in particular in Africa, you do have to prove that you don't have a fever, which is what they're going to do here. Because if we really listen to what Cuomo was saying and what, you know, now President's White Citizens Council he just started, I'm being sarcastic because everybody in his real America is white. Right. I'm not. I'm being a little funny, but a little levity. That what they're going to do, they're just going to now, everywhere we go to move, whether it's going to be a movie theater or my daughter going back to school or Justice going to work or me going to the grocery shop, you're going to have to get scanned and make sure your temperature is okay before you move anywhere. So that's already in place, like Kali said. And just this last point, we have to think about automation. See, now these companies are realizing, mm-hmm. I don't really need any register. I don't need anybody on a register at Walmart. It's completely automated. You come in, you grab your stuff, you check yourself out, and you go later. They might leave one person in the front to supervise to make sure everybody who's doing self-checkout is okay. They're about to roll out trucks now that don't have to have a human being in them. And in fact, I saw that report 2 weeks ago on 60 Minutes, and I didn't know this was happening, where there were, probably Khalid probably did mention this to me, where they're going to figure out, we don't need truck drivers anymore. We can automate these trucks. So everything Khalid said is right. I just pointing out those two things so people begin to see clearly, like, this is already happening. And lastly, why would black and brown men want to wear bandanas when they can't even wear hoodies without being murdered by the police? Like, why is nobody saying, like, there's a reason, first, why black and brown people don't want to wear masks, but also there's a reason why black and brown communities have a distrust of the health industry, because we've always been the bodies that they want to test on. And the director of the World Health Organization had to call out France, this French doctor who said, I'm going to go to, I'm probably not Nigeria, I'm going to go somewhere in West Africa and give me just some people to test on. Come on now. They've been doing that for, we have a historical distrust, as we should, of the health industry, because our bodies are always the ones that are used for experimental testing.
Real talk right there. That's the voice of Rosa Clemente. And I think it was Senegal they were talking about doing that at, but, you know, one of the Francophone countries. You know, one of the things that you said, Kali, and I want to dovetail off this, and I'm going to say this again very slowly so people listening can clearly understand. Folks are now finding that, you know, maybe John and Sue and James, they don't need to come into this expensive office in downtown San Francisco to do the work. This is what you were talking about. And some people right now, they're finding this to be a relief. Like, oh, I get to spend time with my kids. I'm not doing a 2 and 3 hour commute. I'm not going through office politics and all that. But what they're not talking about is like what they're doing in Texas and what they already have in place in some of the companies here when folks are telecommuting. Software that registers if you're sitting in front of your computer, a requirement that you have your camera on. These types of things, if you surf the net for more than 30 seconds, go to the bathroom and you're away from your computer, they are now able to monitor that. So, in fact, it's a little bit more efficient than if you're in the office. And so while people are maybe enjoying some of this, those who have the luxury of still getting a salary and are working, I've been very clear, you better make sure that you're fighting to have best practices in order. For example, these Zoom things, I'm talking to people now, and they're going, man, I've been on 4 or 5 Zoom calls, 2 hours apiece, right? And now you have bosses or employers that are looking at folks and going, hey, John, I know it's your dinner time, but can you jump on a Zoom call for, you know, a few more minutes, right? So now that you are, you know, that you're connected to Zoom, you're always available. The same way that people once upon a time would go on vacation and they would be away from the office. And then we had cell phones and they were like, hey, Kali, keep your cell phone on. We may need you to call in. Now it's like, I need you to keep your Zoom on. And by the way, turn on that Zoom. And are you really at home or are you out on the beach somewhere? You know, are you really sick? Can we see? You know, and so there's going to be a level of intrusion with this technology. And I hope to God that people are contacting organizations like the Electronic Frontier Foundation and other organizations to make sure that you are fighting for best practices and that you don't have some sort of unintended abuse, as they're doing with school teachers in Texas, with the technology that now monitors literally their every move. So you're at home, but you're constrained in ways that people, I think, would find very uncomfortable. But with that all being said, this dovetails into this conversation about economic inequality and the need for a general strike and what we should be looking at as we go towards May Day. So let's jump into that and connect the dots. And I'll start off with you, Kali.
Mm-hmm.
Well, the first thing is we got to make sure that folks don't come back to work prematurely, and that, you know, Trump and his allies, you know, basically don't kill us by, you know, having folks come back in, you know, on May Day, you know. And despite the history around May Day, we want everybody to be clear that really in part was determined by him and this order that, you know, when he stated originally that he wants the country to open up on May Day, you know, at the end of his kind of stay-at-home recommendation, which was everybody kind of stay in place on April 30th. And again, just to reiterate why that's important, there's no universal health care in this country. There's no guaranteed sick leave for the vast majority of people in this country. Millions of people have lost their health care in the past 3 weeks because it's directly attached to their employment. So if you are unemployed, you've been cut off. There's no extension of COBRA that they've provided for anybody. You know, the paid sick leave is not guaranteed for most, and then Trump did some executive orders to cut that off. So literally, the first step is we have to save our lives by taking collective action in each other's collective benefit. That's number one of why we calling this, you know. So folks can strike in place at home and communicate what you're doing. For those folks who are not at work sites, who are not deemed essential, we want to encourage everybody to, you know, take stock of all the things you might need to supply up so that there's no buying of any materials on May 1st. This will help put you in solidarity with folks at Amazon and the Walmart and all these supply chains. You know, so that gives them cover for not having to be in those warehouses and can stand firm and take collective action, shutting down, destroying our collective power. You know, so these are some things we're trying to build for, and why we're calling this is really first and foremost a protective measure. But on the heels of that, you know, on the basis of what we were talking about how capital, how the corporations are using this crisis to reorganize society, make it more harsh, more exploitative than it already is, more racist than it already is. We need to make sure that we are fighting for the broad transformative things that are needed in this society to ensure a better future for everybody. You know, so making sure that there's universal services, making sure that there's universal health care, making sure that there's a universal basic income, you know, for everybody, and that the income does not become a replacement for basic services like childcare, free education, you know, from K through whatever you want to do, PhD, whatever the situation is, to make sure that there's free education for that. We need to make sure that we shut down all these detention centers, all these prisons, all these holding cells. We need to give adequate protection to folks who are working in the farms and in the fields and in these processing plants so that they're protected. A deeper part of that still is we're not going to change any of those things unless we organize ourselves collectively to maximize, you know, power at the workplace. And that begins by trying to encourage workers to cooperatize, you know, where they work and to turn them into democratic institutions and reorganize society to produce, you know, for a need rather than producing for a small group of people's profit. And, you know, people ask about, How would you afford that? One of the things we're saying, you know, the U.S. military is the only institution short of Wall Street that's guaranteed to not have any money not fully at its disposal. So there's resources galore to be able to pay for all this and then some. And that first starts by shutting down all these bases that the United States have all over the world, redirecting that towards the social programs, you know, stop this whole military piece. So there's some practical but transformative things that we've been trying to put on the initial kind of set of demands that we've put out to kind of organize folks towards taking a long-term view and a long-term approach around this. Because the fact of the matter is we're not going back to the society that existed before COVID-19. Folks can give up that dream. They can talk about going back to work as normal. But like we said, if it's up to, you know, corporations and the businesses, they're going to use this to reorganize things in a profound way that's still not going to be on to our benefit. They can only do that if we don't stand together, united, exercise, you know, our control of our labor, and send some clear messages. And the last piece I'll say, and then turn over to Rhodes, we want folks to be clear. Look, May Day is 2 weeks away, you know, basically. So that's a short period of time. Our call was one about self-defense first and foremost, the piece of cooperation Jackson put out. Others put out other calls even before we did. So we want to give acknowledgement and respect to that, right? So we're trying to combine all this energy, combine it with all the different spontaneous things of folks, you know, have been doing without anybody calling or pushing them. You know, the rent strikes, some of the stuff that happened in Oakland over the weekend, you know, which I thought was beautiful. Some of the pieces that I think was Moms for Housing and Mason folks had put together. Some of the stuff that's going on, like in Philly, with folks trying to get folks out of prison by doing the car caravans. So there's motion already. The issue and the challenge is putting us all together, right? And working towards some common accord. We don't have to unite on every single demand. We don't have to unite on every single tactic. But the main point is for us, as many of us in the millions, to be in motion, sending the clear message that we're not going to allow things to return back to normal, and that there's going to be a new norm that we collectively institute, and not let government and the corporations and the instruments of capital dictate to us what the future is going to be.
That's the voice of Kali Nkuno out of Cooperation Jackson. He's in Jackson, Mississippi. Rhoda Clemente, there are people listening, and they're saying, you know, when this pandemic happened, I lost every single job that, you know, I depend on. I'm a gig worker. I couldn't get gigs, you know, I couldn't do my services, and it just disappeared overnight. And not only can I not pay rent, I'm having a difficult time making sure I can even get food on the table. And so there are people that are sitting there, they're cramped in a two-bedroom apartment with four people, and they're waiting to go to work. They just want to get out the house. And yeah, it may be not to the best liking and all that, but desperate people will take crumbs. How do we talk to those folks who are really, you know, on the margins, whose stories haven't been uplifted, who are really, you know, at wit's end? How do we engage them? Because they are really the face of the economic inequality. It's a privilege when we can get on Zoom and have these conversations, but their folks, they don't even have computers, you know, and the ones that they have are definitely outdated, because I have an outdated computer, and my kid, it doesn't get video for Zoom, believe it or not, and it's a MacBook. So, you know, so there are folks that are living that sort of reality, and so how do we engage them moving forward?
Yeah, I don't think it's about how we engage those that are the most marginalized, because they're the ones that always have the solutions to the problems. I think what has to happen is those of us with privilege, i.e. not maybe economic privilege, but definitely the privilege of being in an organization, the privilege of having comrades you can call, the privilege of understanding what mutual aid really means. But to be honest, like, you know, if I were to be going and in the Bronx right now walking down, I know that there would be people there who are like, hey, does your grandma need some food? What's going on? What does abuela need? Like, that's already happening from, quote, the people we know are marginalized. I think what we have to talk about is the economic marginalization that has now been, as Kali said, the realignment is now here. And we're never going back to, quote, whatever normal was, even if all of us agreed that the way we were living was not normal. So for me, I'm listening to, you know, as I always do, brothers and sisters who are locked up, brothers and sisters who are coming out, brothers and sisters who are working two jobs. I mean, right now, Amazon and Walmart are going on the biggest hiring spree ever. Mm-hmm. And who's applying for those jobs? Our people, poor people, because they need to eat, because they know the government is not doing a damn thing on the federal level, usually on a state and local level, for them. You know, so I think it's more important on some of us who I call the professional organizing class that got caught up these last 10 years in first waiting for a president to do the right thing. No president is ever going to do the right thing, or waiting on some foundation grant to give you some money to start a project. Like, all of that is vetted too. And I do also hope, and Melina Abdullah, you know, Melina just tweeted this. How come we have to be productive every moment of our lives during a global pandemic? Like Holly was just saying, and you were saying, Davey, that if you work from home, they're now counting and they can tell whether you're on the system or not by how many times you push a button or you're clicking or you're zooming in, right? So now, in the midst of a global pandemic, these corporations and these public utilities and media and all of that, they want people to be extra productive because apparently when you're home, you have to work 24/7 and never get a break. And we're falling into that trap. We're falling into it because we keep having these Zoom meetings and the this, and what are we going to do? Maybe it's time that we just take a beat, follow some cooperative economic values and visions like what Cooperation Jackson has, and spend these next 2 weeks truly telling the government. Because nurses are doing it already, Davey. There are Amazon workers who've already been fired. In fact, the lead Amazon worker in Staten Island, the day after he led the strike, a young brother was fired, and there was an audio that was leaked where Jeff Bezos and the vice president of Amazon, or the vice president of Amazon, was saying nobody's going to listen to him. He's completely inarticulate. Really? Why did they have to say that in a meeting? First, because he's black, so of course he has to be inarticulate. But more, it was like, how is this young man getting our workers to stop right now? We got to figure that out right now. We got to end it. So we have to take a moment, but we also have to say the only thing we have left is a general strike. We have nothing left. We cannot depend on elected officials. We cannot depend on pundits on TV. We cannot depend on rappers. We can't depend on anybody but the people that are the most marginalized, and using our leadership and the following and influencing that we have to say, unless we shut this country down, people who go to work are literally marching to their own death. That's what they want us to do. I refuse to be part of that. And there's a lot of us who are not going to be part of that. If they open up schools, I'm not sending my daughter back to school. What kind? And you know what? If that's a burden on me, whatever, we'll figure it out. But there is in no way in hell, in 2 weeks, I'm going to be sending my daughter back into a school with 1,000 kids in it and sick people. I'm not doing it. So that means we have to figure out. And actually, we don't really have to figure it out. The plans are there for us. We just now have to be motivated as a people to do it without worrying about what someone's going to think or about being so politically rigid. Like Kali said about, I don't have to agree with you on every point, but we damn sure better shut this down. And Davey, I know I might go over and you have to edit this, but I wanted to bring up one point that I really wanted to say. You know, Puerto Rico right now first has some of the most draconian curfews and fines happening, right? So it was one of the first, a territory of the United States. Wanda Vasquez, the governor, was real quick to shut it down when that Italian woman was found to come off the cruise ship and had the coronavirus. Unfortunately, she died. But the way Wanda Vasquez did it is very draconian. So there's a curfew in Puerto Rico right now to this day. After 8 o'clock until now 6 in the morning, you cannot be out unless what you're doing is quote essential. Second, what she is also doing is she hiked the fine from $1,000 to $5,000. So imagine you're walking in the middle of the night, you got to get your kids and diapers, whatever. First, the police are going to pull you over and then give you a $5,000 fine. Who the hell can afford that anywhere in the world for the most part? But in Puerto Rico particularly, if we were a state, we'd be right next to Mississippi as the state that has the most the medium income is the lowest. So in Puerto Rico, the medium income is like $23,000. But after Hurricane Maria, this is what happened, and this is why we need this general strike, and we all need to be pushing. It's not just the action, it's the reset of our consciousness, or the opening of our consciousness. Mm-hmm. After what the federal government and Trump did to Puerto Rico, what the people in Puerto Rico do, we will no longer not only trust the federal government, we don't even trust our own government. So what happened after Hurricane Maria? Renewable energy is being used on the island. People have taken over houses. There are people there who started farming. There are healers there that are now saying you cannot depend on a healthcare system. We will find what we need here within the land and all of that. There are people whose schools closed down but are doing what they call unlearning, which is like our kids need to be learning how to grow, you know, food and be healthy and all of that outside of an education system that socializes. That's been happening in Puerto Rico. Then we got rid of Jose Joe, one governor, and we're about to get rid of another one, Wanda Vasquez. And the reason I bring this up and it's important is that after Hurricane Maria, the mind shift of a lot of Puerto Ricans changed. The day before, a lot of Puerto Ricans, especially older ones, would be like, what will we do without the United States? The day after Hurricane Maria, the consciousness of an entire nation changed because they saw exactly what would happen, that the federal government was never going to save us. So what Wanda Vasquez just did last night in Puerto Rico, she has now barred journalists from covering any of the press briefings coming out of the governor's office.
Wow.
So that's what she, she just did that yesterday. There's an order now in Puerto Rico at her daily press briefings. She said she was tired of people attacking Donald Trump and attacking her, so no journalist will no longer be allowed to cover the press briefings coming out of the governor's mansion in Puerto Rico.
So that sounds like
talk about draconian thing. Look at what's happening in Puerto Rico right now, but also look on the flip side of how people are saying this is now self-determination. We're not dependent on anybody. We're dependent on mutual aid, growing our own food, and you will also strike against these governors because they shouldn't be manipulated and corrupt. But with all that said, there has been a consciousness that is very beautiful and very uplifting when it comes to Puerto Rico.
You know, when you describe what that governor is doing, that sounds like part of that reset. Let's reset society and make it the norm. You know what? You don't need to cover these press conferences.
Trump will do it soon.
Yeah.
He hasn't done it yet, but when you look at the press conferences, there's less and less journalists that are being let in. And pretty soon, he'll just be like, you know what? Forget it. I'll just say what I have to say on TV, and I'm not taking no more questions from these fake news reporters, as he said.
Right. Which means that it will be up to those other levers of power to check that. For example, not carrying his message and to, you know, to reset how we're going to engage folks. You know, there's a lot more that we can really dig into. So, Kali, how can people get involved with the strike? What would be the marching orders as we have a couple of minutes left?
Mm-hmm. Well, the first thing is folks should reach out to us, you know, directly. We've been having some kind of coordinating calls trying to put all these different sectors together. So mayday2020generalstrike@gmail.com is the simplest way.
Say that again one more time.
It's long. mayday2020generalstrike@gmail.com. Folks can find, you know, the preliminary call that we issued on our website, which is cooperationjackson.org. We are working with some broad coalition forces that have come together to this point to release a new website that'll be later on this week. We haven't determined what the URL is yet, so stay tuned. You know, we're in some dialogue with folks from who put out the General Strike 2020 website before we did, and then there's another group called the Corona Strike. So we are going to start some dialogue to come up with like one pivotal thing, or at least one hub to share information with later on this week for folks to be aware of that. Then other than that, look, everybody needs to talk to your family, your friends, your coworker, folks in your congregations and masjids and synagogues and temples, and move them to take this up you know, endorse the call, our call, other folks' call, really doesn't matter. But take this up. You know, there's a lot of action that needs to take place, and it is taking place before May Day. We all need to support each other, be it at the rent strikes, which are going on, be it the strikes to get folks out of these detention centers and prisons, some actions that's going on there, supporting the nurses and some of their actions, which I think is going on in California, but also, you know, throughout the country. Anytime you see folks, you know, workers standing up for themselves, we want to encourage everybody to be in solidarity with them, show them political support by, you know, raising their demands, signing their petitions, advancing them, you know, donating whatever you can, $5, $50, $100, you know, to help people with their strike funds and action funds. You know, we just got to get in motion leading towards May 1st. And I'll just say, again, look, May 1st is a target date. It's a launching pad. It's not the end all to be all. We want that, make that clear to everybody, that it's a place to start with, because it's going to take us organizing, learning. I'm glad Rosa brought up the example of Puerto Rico, because I think it's illustrative of what we can do. And if we're just patient enough to sit down and collectively learn, we'll re-pivot. And it shows the possibility of what we can do, you know, short of you know, these authoritarian structures that exist. We can do it and be self-governing and move on some things ourselves. So take up learning that knowledge, you know, organize with your neighbors, your friends, and your family. Even under these conditions, we can do those things.
Okay.
With the technology, with the phone, with connecting, with the social distancing. There's a lot of things that we can do that folks are clearly innovating on. So get in action. That's what I would tell everybody.
We appreciate that. Rosa, we have about 30 seconds. Last comments from you.
I mean, all I would say is, it's because you said the issue about wealth. I mean, and I know how you meant the question. I really don't care how many millionaires lose a couple more million dollars, like whatever. Like, you know, sorry, you're not going to. And I think part of it is also like the livelihood, not just the money, is being taken away. So that I understand a lot more and can contend with that. But I do want you to bring Dr. Jared Ball, because his new book, The Myth of Black Buying Power, is really so relevant to this idea that he says is a false one, and one that's been perpetuated, that black people particularly have all this wealth. And if we all come together under this economic understanding of how much money we have together, then we would essentially be free, and we'd all have money, and we'd all be rich and all of that kind of stuff. So I want you to bring him on, you know, and I want people to go right now and pre-order his book, The Myth of Black Buying Power, because at this time, if we don't see that capitalism is an utter failure and everything coming out of this is because capitalism is an utter failure, then we're really behind the rest of the world in understanding why we're where we're at right now.
There you have it. And Jared is scheduled to be on this week, so they will hear him. So we're going to take a break on Hard Knock Radio. I want to thank Rosa Clemente. I want to thank Kali Ancuno. We're going to take a break. We'll be right back.
I'ma still sing my song. I'ma still shine my light. Can't stop me. You can't stop me, no. I'ma still sing my song. I'ma still shine my light. You can't stop me.
They said we locked down, okay, I'm going in my bag. Gonna be a beast, sharpen the skills, working on the craft. Transported the lab to the living room, sheltered in place. I'll be compelled to create, might catch me singing. We'll be right back.
90.7 FM, listener-supported community radio.
You're listening to KBOO Portland.
KBOO is responding to the COVID-19 pandemic in our community. Tune in and check our website for updates at kboo.fm/COVID-19. And don't